This is an ABC podcast.
This is the South Australian Country Hour on ABC Radio South Australia and Broken Hill.
Hello, welcome to the South Australian Country Hour. I'm Cassie Huff. It's now one last sleep until Christmas, but there is no slowing down for farmers though, many of whom will have to supply the food that is such a big part of Christmas. We're going to hear what's happening down at the Adelaide Central Markets and the fish markets soon. We also know it's been a tough year for many people, especially those affected by fire recently. Dairy farmers in the Adelaide Hills are taking stock after power outages caused some issues for them.
I would say there probably hasn't been a lot of losses in as far as production-wise. Well, okay, it stresses the cows out a little bit, but as long as you still can feed them and they've got a reasonable routine, they'll probably be fine. The biggest losses will be losses to fodder and fencing, and if there was any remaining pastures.
We'll hear more from dairy farmers in about 15 minutes. But there's a lot happening in the Adelaide Hills today. The Prime Minister, Scott Morrison, is in town. The state government has also established a new emergency relief fund to help people directly affected by the devastating Cuddly Creek bushfire, pledging $1 million to kickstart the donation drive. South Australians are being encouraged to give to the Cuddly Creek fire appeal. The state emergency relief fund has also been activated following a formal declaration of the Cuddly Creek fire as a declared emergency by the governor late yesterday. The fund, which is to be managed by a 5-member committee, will accept and distribute financial donations to the families and businesses of those who have lost their homes and livelihoods in the wake of the tragedy. So we look forward to hearing more about how that fund goes, with people pledging money to help support people who have been affected by the fires. We'll also have more on the impact on primary production as a result of the fires that have taken place. First, though, we're going to head to the Adelaide Central Market, where it is teeming with people keen to pick up some fresh produce ahead of the Christmas break. All the traditional favourites are there, but market CEO Jodie Kiernan says that there's some new trends coming through as well.
Well, there's a wonderful buzz in at the market this morning. It's a wonderful time for people to come in to share amazing food. So there's definitely a lot happening today at the Central Market.
You've got your traditional Christmas fare, your cherries, pork, turkey, seafood. What is really walking off the shelves this year?
Yeah, definitely all the signature market favourites, like you mentioned. So the local cherries, stone fruit, South Australian seafood, South Australian leg ham on the bone, Christmas puddings, free-range turkeys. It's all happening here.
But as we know all too well, there has been a huge fire in the Adelaide Hills that has taken out a large area of intensive farmland. What has that meant for the Adelaide markets?
Well, at the moment, our traders have been able to access the fresh produce that the customers are looking for Christmas. So I think the impacts of the fire are still being assessed. I know that we've got people and producers that are so busy packing to meet demand for certain items like cherries that they wouldn't have had the opportunity yet to perhaps look at some of the other areas of their farming and what the flow-on effects of that will be moving forward. So we'll certainly be working with the traders and local producers to see what support is needed over the coming months.
What's it like for traders after Christmas? This is obviously the big rush, but with the impact on the food production in the Adelaide Hills, do you see there being more of an effect after Christmas?
Well, I think that's still being assessed at the moment. I mean, we do get a significant number of local produce, some from the Adelaide Hills. We also do source a lot of other products from other regions in South Australia. So a lot of our stone fruit comes from the Riverland. So, you know, peaches and nectarines and those types of items are coming from there. And obviously we've got lots of other fresh producers, you know, such as the seafood and items like that that obviously will continue to come into the market. So I think the wider impact will be assessed probably post-Christmas.
Beyond the traditional Christmas fair, have you heard of anything perhaps a little different getting a lot of interest this year?
Yeah, it's interesting. People are looking for some alternative Christmas treats. So we have got producers such as House of Health, and they've got like gluten-free Christmas puddings, raw gingerbread balls, zero-waste bonbons, so lots of vegan and gluten-free and refined sugar treats. So that is some of the change in, I guess, consumer spends. The other thing with seafood, I think there's a high volume of shoppers that are looking to choose local and sustainable catches. So they are requesting things. I know in abundance this year there's Coorong Mulloway, and people are looking to cook whole fish on the barbie this Christmas. And it's great that our traders in here obviously are close with the producers, so they also give really great tips on actually how to cook things that perhaps you haven't cooked before.
It is a great time of year for produce. It is a good time of year to perhaps experiment, try something you haven't tried before. So it's good to see that there's so much available that people can do that with. Thank you so much for joining us, Jodie.
Thanks, Kathy. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you too. Market CEO, Adelaide Central Market CEO, Jodie Kinane, speaking there. And we were talking about seafood. It is one of my favourite treats for Christmas. And Spencer Gulf prawns don't last very long in our house. But what has been popular for customers, other customers, in the lead up to the big day? Brooke Nindorf caught up with a very busy Craig McCathy from the Fresh Fish Place to find out.
Look, yeah, we're flat out as normal. Almost queues of people coming in to get their seafood. We've got the 2 days left, today and tomorrow, and we're expecting it to be absolutely flat out.
As I've come in, I am holding you up at a busy time, I think, but there's just lines of people coming in and getting all sorts of seafood. What are they selecting for Christmas Day?
When they can afford it, love a crayfish. So we're cooking hundreds of crayfish at the moment. And luckily we're still getting some large ones, 2 kilo, there's 3 kilo ones came in today. But the most popular is around about a kilo, kilo and a half. Otherwise, prawns are huge. We sell tons of prawns. The medium large size of the cooked prawn is the most popular. They're good value this year. Even better is the medium. And then there's always those soft and broken ones, which prove very popular because they're really good value. Otherwise, there's other great stuff, Spencer Gulf bugs. And then we sell lots of smoked fish too at this time of the year.
With the crayfish, I was reading that prices of those have had to go up a little bit. Are you finding that's the case?
Yeah, well, it's evened out a little bit. It started up high at the start of the season in November, and now it seems to have settled a little bit around about the same price as last year.
With the warmer temperatures that we've been seeing, how have you been coping with that?
Oh yeah, it's always tough in this game because we have lots of refrigeration equipment, freezers and chillers and fridges everywhere. So yeah, that adds to my stress quite a bit to keep everything running at the right temperature. But we're getting better at it.
What about the recent power outages that we've seen on these catastrophic fire days? So are you affected by them at all?
Yes, the power outages and with. SA Power Networks now deciding to turn the power off if they see it catastrophic has changed how us businesses have to think about what we're doing in the future. And so I've had to hire in a generator in days like that. And now it's a priority to have to purchase a generator to run the business on the days that that'll happen, which is a huge cost to us. But that's the plan for next summer.
Did you lose much stock in that one a couple of weeks ago?
The one couple of weeks ago when the power was out for 8 hours, we lost stock in the cool room. The freezers were fine because they were very cold at the time. But it's not good to do that.
Well, we'll go back onto the more Christmassy things, Craig. And I know I ask you this most years, but is there anything in particular new that's going to be on the Christmas table this year for you guys?
So one thing that's new is there's no snapper because of the 3-year snapper ban. So, but we have plenty of Nanny Guy, which is equivalent to snapper and better tasting. Lots of nice small ones of those, up to about 2 kilo. What else is popular is the kingfish whole for baking. So what we do is specially try and get them a bit smaller, because the kingfish get up to about 4 kilo. It can be a bit big for the oven, too big for the Weber. So now we're trying to get them at about two kilo, and they're coming in today. So they'll prove very popular too.
Are people still asking for snapper?
There's a few people, but most people know that the South Australians know what's going on with the snapper. So, but we do have snapper that we have bought in from New Zealand, small snapper as well, which is the same.
Well, Craig, I better let you go because there are people just streaming in the door here getting ready for Christmas Day. All the very best, and thank you once again for your time.
Thank you, Brooke.
That was Brooke Nindorf speaking to Craig McCathy from the Fresh Fish Place there about all the great South Australian seafood that is available in the lead up to Christmas. You're listening to The Country Hour. It's 12:15.
You're listening to the South Australian Country Hour on ABC Radio South Australia and Broken Hill.
We'll head to the hills now, as we just heard from Craig McCathy there about the impact of the power outages on his fish business. The dairy industry has also had a few issues with that in the Adelaide Hills, given the fire. Rick Gladigal is a dairy farmer at Mount Torrens. Bridget Herman had a chat with Rick to find out how Adelaide Hills milk producers are faring.
Most people will try and have their cattle somewhere so that they don't get impacted, especially the dairy herd, because the last thing you do want is burnt feet or mouths or burnt udders. So that's sort of the first priority with them. And from then on, trying to minimise the damage from the fire. But after that, it's, have we got access to water? And generally, like here, the power was off that went off that afternoon. We were notified it was going to be switched off. So it's planning on how you're going to milk your cows, then going forward, because you don't know how long the power's going to be out for. And then we get impacted by, if you're in a fire zone, they may not let tankers in to collect the milk. And depending on who you supply, whether they've actually got power to even accept the milk, so, or even have to be able to store it. So they're sort of your first, the first group of things. And from then on, it's, have you got fodder loss, or you know, protecting your fodder from not even getting burnt to start with. But if you have got it burnt, then what are you going to do? Because you also may not have any paddock feed left as well.
What about if cows have burnt udders?
That can be a big problem. It's just like as if a human gets burns like that, you know, third degree burns or something. Well, there's probably not much you can really do to necessarily treat them, because they're going to swell up and then you're going to have mastitis and all those other issues will happen. And depending on how bad it is, it's probably very hard to actually fix them. But touch wood, I've never actually had the issue, so I've never actually seen it myself. But you'd probably usually have to euthanise them if they're too badly burnt.
Is it feasible to move dairy cows to another property?
Yeah, it is. Like, if you had to shift them to another farm to get them milked quite easily, you know, the sooner you'd do it sooner than later, because you don't want to be waiting too long before being able to milk them again, which is why most of us now just doing the planning and buying generators and that sort of stuff, so that we don't have to sit around waiting for a day, you know, more than 24 hours to be able to milk the cows, because it does affect them.
And if the cows are traumatised, can that affect the milk?
Oh, yeah, it'll affect production, and they also can get other issues with, like, mastitis, etc., from just stress, which same as what we do.
Could you estimate how much this fire is going to cost the local dairy industry?
It's probably a little bit hard. I would say we've probably, because we've all got plans in place now to be able to milk our cows, and the way that it's turned out with being able to get tankers and that in, I would doubt that anyone's actually had to tip milk out, that they've all had enough storage, etc., to be able to hold it. And luckily enough, the processors have got power, et cetera, again, and the tankers have been able to get in and collect it. I would say there probably hasn't been a lot of losses in as far as production-wise. Well, okay, it stresses the cows out a little bit, but as long as you still can feed them and they've got a reasonable routine, they'll probably be fine. The biggest losses will be, you know, losses to fodder and fencing, and if there was any remaining pastures. So, and it's a little bit of a hard one to put the figure on how much fodder's actually people have lost. And with cows, like especially dairy cows, you need to feed them, because if you don't feed them well, they don't produce any milk.
No, they definitely need to keep up the feed to dairy cows because they've got a lot of work to do there. That was Rick Gladigo having a chat with Bridget Herman. And Rick supplies dairy products to the local Adelaide cheesemaker Udder Delights. Owner Cherie Sullivan hasn't had a great time of it. She says that the company's Lobethal factory is still standing, but $1 million worth of cheese was ruined.
It's just overheated and also smoke affected. So we are in the process of throwing out about 40,000 kilos worth of cheese, which is really heartbreaking.
40,000 kilograms?
Yes.
What is that in a monetary value?
Oh, it'd be close to $1 million. And if it was out in the marketplace, probably closer to two. So it's a significant amount. And it's lots of hard work. You know, it's blue cheese that's been maturing, you know, for 4 to 5 months and cheddars and all sorts of breeds and fresh goat cheeses, and it's hard for the staff because it's their hard work that, you know, and hard for the dairy farmers and that it's all that milk. And I guess it's just really wasteful, but we don't have a choice.
You've started off as a family business, and as you've grown, you've been able to find support, but this is still your family's legacy. How does that, this is more than just cheese being thrown out.
Yeah, it was really hard to drive through Lobethal today, just seeing how black everything is. And I think just how close the town came to, you know, going up in smoke. So, yeah, it's just hard. It's funny. It just makes me quite emotional. And I think a few people have said that too. And I don't fully understand why, but it just does. Like, because we've still got our business.
I'd like to have a chat about the cheese. You said it's been heat affected and smoke affected. What does that mean?
Because of the prolonged, we don't know how the cool rooms heated up. Was it the prolonged power cut? Was it machinery breakdown with the water being dumped, which we're grateful for, you know, water being dumped on the factory? Regardless, the cheese is gone over temperature for too long and you just can't, we can't trust it. Or you could sort of take a risk on it, but we're not going to. And smoke affected, particularly the cheeses that are sitting in maturation rooms and not in packaging, it just was all smelling so smoky. So we'd be selling smoked cheese.
You source from a lot of local dairy farmers and sell to a lot of local shops. Is this going to affect any of those?
It affected some of our dairy farmers because when the roads were and the power was cut, they had full vats that they needed to deliver. And they couldn't. So some of our dairy farmers had to dump milk. Moving forward, it should be okay as long as there's no more road closures or power cuts. But we just have to wait and see because even now there's planes overhead and CFS going past, you know. So I'd like to think it's not going to affect them in the future. Our customers, they're going to be more affected because it's going to take us 3 to 4 weeks to get stock out, all our white moulds, and it's going to take 2 to 3 months to get all our blue cheeses. And that's, we're making them right now, but it's the maturation time required. That's the hardest thing for us moving forward. And all that loss of income, I guess, as well, that we incur, but so do our distributors and our retailers.
You're a medium-sized business. There's a lot of small to medium-sized businesses in food production in the hills.
Mm.
How is this affecting that industry?
I think just all the smaller businesses, like even in Lobethal and Woodside, if you've got the deli or you've got the supermarket or you've got a butcher and you can't get your power on, and I don't even think generators would have been allowed to use in those conditions we had on that Friday. That wind was so full on. You just lose your stock. So there's a lot of people who would have lost refrigerated goods, as would have all the households, you know. And but I guess my heart really goes out for the people who, and many dear friends, who've lost their grapes and they've lost their fruit. And that's potentially next year's income that's not there now. I can already see that the community, the South Australian community, are supporting us. And that I just, you know, when our produce gets back on shelf as per our, you know, our winery friends and the fruit growers, that if the local people could just buy it and help get all the businesses back running like they were.
Yeah, it does sound like there's a very strong will to rebuild there in the Adelaide Hills. That was Cherie Sullivan speaking to Bridget Herman. There've been many sad stories like that one from Cherie, but they're also at the same time people are very grateful for what was saved. And we just heard from dairy farmer Rick Gladigal. Well, his brother is Kim Gladigal. He's a farmer at Harrogate, and all of his family's properties were lost in the fire. Kim says that while they've lost fences and summer feed, he's about as happy as he could be right now because they managed to save all the houses, the sheds and the livestock, including some little lambs by some miracle. Here's what Kim told Bridget Herman.
On Saturday morning, I thought, well, I'd better go down and face the music because that's where the fire came through that paddock, just burning. I went down there and all the lambs are as happy as Larry. There's not even one singed. They must have just all walked over and stood in about half an acre of brassicas, and they've all survived. So I couldn't be happier about that.
And how many lambs are we talking?
There was 52 in that mob. And then I had another mob of ewes that are about to lamb on the 17th of December. And the property that they were on has got burnt from one end to the other. On Saturday morning, I went to look at those. And they were all standing in the corner of the paddock. I haven't had to destroy any of them, so they're still okay. You know, I had a mob of cattle that I let out of a paddock as the fire was coming into the paddock, and I thought, well, I can't do anything more for you. And then I realised, you know, by late that night that whole property had got burnt from one end to the other, and I thought, well, that's the end of those cattle. In the morning, I went over there, and they're all standing in the hay shed eating the hay. I said, you just stand there, and you eat all the hay that you want. I'm just pleased to have you.
What did you do on the day? Did you evacuate?
No, my wife and son had gone down to our holiday house at Middleton to get ready for Christmas in the morning, and, you know, nothing was kicking off then, you know. It was all just a normal day. And I decided to stay home at the farm, and we didn't smell any smoke or have any smoke here, even at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. So I decided to stay and just got things prepared, got the fire unit parked by the house, set the sprinklers going and pumps on the around the house and on the sheds and watering things down. And then about 5 o'clock, it all went calm, and then everything started to kick off as the wind changed and came from the southwest. We had fire coming from the southwest of the property, and then we ended up with fire coming from the north of the property as well. We were sort of just in the middle of it, but I had a couple of chaps here who I'll be eternally grateful to, who saved all of our hay and every shed, you know, just with knapsacks and putting out little fires. I've just always maintained that through summertime I have to have all the paddocks around the house eaten down to bare ground, and so when the flame comes across the paddock, it was only like a foot high and you could just go with a knapsack and put it out, and those guys saved the day. So, you know, we've got a lot to be thankful for. I mean, obviously there's a lot of houses and a lot of assets and that are burnt in other places, sheds and so forth, but I just can't be more thankful for what we've got left.
Absolutely. There's a lot of people who are feeling the same way as Kim is about what they have been able to save rather than what they have lost there in the Adelaide Hills as a result of the fires. You're listening to The Country Hour. I'm Cassie Huff. And in a moment, we're going to head to the Adelaide Hills where there is a special fire relief event taking place. Bridget Herman is up there chatting to locals about why the event has been held. But first, we'll find out what is happening for the weather for Christmas Day. We're joined by Brett Gage. Hi, Brett.
Hi, Cassie.
So tell me, is it going to remain a bit cooler like it is today?
Yeah, well, it depends what part of the state you're talking about, really. It will remain mild to warm about southern coast. In fact, it'll be a bit milder than today down there even. And that's because we'll have a bit of a southerly push up with a new high coming in. Really in the early hours of tomorrow morning, we'll start seeing a better southerly push through southern coast. And that will push a little bit through the agricultural area tomorrow. So In fact, the southerlies will freshen about the coast in the afternoon. We'll see some pretty fresh sea breezes, at least 15 to 20 knots on most coasts. And, yeah, so that will keep the temperatures mild to warm about southern coast, but still very hot in the pastoral districts and in the northern agricultural area as well. So across the northern agricultural area, we're looking at temperatures in the high 30s and up in the pastoral districts and parts of the lower parts of the Flinders, 40 degrees plus. So having a look at some of the maximums we're predicting at the moment for tomorrow, say down on the southern coast, Kingsgate, we've only got 25 degrees, Port Lincoln 25, Victor Harbour 25, down in the southeast, Mount Gambier 24. And then as we start working further northwards, it's getting hotter. So 34 degrees at Keith, 39 at Renmark, and then in the central parts, 35 degrees at Clare, Port Augusta 37, and then over on Eyre Peninsula, 32 at Cummins, 37 at Kimber, 40 degrees at Woodner, pretty hot there. The west coast, 31 for Ceduna. And then as we move inland, further inland, we're getting into the 40s. So 40 degrees for Woomera, 42 Tarcoola, 43 Coober Pedy, Lee Creek, 41, Moomba, 43, Oodnadatta, still a very hot 45 degrees up there. So you could say the populated areas of the state aren't doing too badly tomorrow. And weather-wise, we've also got a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms in the west of the state, so west of about Woodner to Coober Pedy and south of Coober Pedy. It's just a slight chance of some high-base thunderstorms out there tomorrow, but the rest of the state should be fine.
Well, it's not quite a Christmas present, it doesn't sound like, for those northern areas. There is, so it does sound like there's a little bit of rain, stormy rain around, but thunderstorms, but not much in it. So not much relief when it comes to a rain point of view. But yeah, I guess people will be battening down the hatches in preparation for the weather to heat up again, by the sounds of things, Brett.
Yeah, that's right. It'll stay mild to warm about southern coasts on Thursday. And then get warm to hot on Friday, and anywhere away from those southern coasts on Friday, it will become very hot. And then on Saturday and Sunday, very hot conditions throughout the entire state. And we'll also see some of those isolated high base thunderstorms extend across the west and the south on the state on Saturday. So, you know, we could be seeing severe fire dangers with high base thunderstorms. So starting to get a look a bit edgy there for the fire weather again. Similar story for Sunday, high base thunderstorms possible across the, well, across most of the state except for the most of the northeast pastoral might remain okay. And then the long-term outlook, as we move into Monday, we'll see a significant cold front move across the west and south of the state on Monday. So, but still very hot ahead of that front. And we'll have a higher chance of precipitation in the southeast of the state with that change. But dry thunderstorms elsewhere ahead with and ahead of that front, but you know, we will see a milder southerly change extend through most parts, and then on New Year's Eve, still very hot in the northeast of the state, but a little bit milder elsewhere, with just a slight chance of thunderies. Well, over inland parts or eastern inland parts on New Year's Eve, but should be fine elsewhere. So. You know, all up, not too bad over the populated areas for Christmas Day and New Year's Eve, but we've got a nasty little period in between the two there where we'll be tested with our fire weather again.
Yeah, dry lightning is the last thing we need, so hopefully that does stay away. Thanks for that, Brett.
You're welcome.
That was Brett Gage. And Merry Christmas to you, I should say, as well.
Merry Christmas to you too, Cassie.
That was Brett Gage from the Bureau of Meteorology speaking there. We'll head to the far west of New South Wales because some of that stormy weather will be in that part of this country as well. It's going to be hot and sunny tomorrow morning for Christmas, but there will still be a smoke haze in the northeast and a bit of a chance of a thunderstorm in the northeast in the afternoon as well for your Christmas Day. Overnight temperatures are going to fall to the low to mid 20s, and the daytime temperatures will reach about 40 degrees. I do hope there is some rain in there, but obviously not dry lightning. Lower Western will be hot and sunny. Overnight temperatures are going to fall to between 19 and 22 degrees, and the daytime temperatures could get up to 40 there as well. So quite a hot Christmas day for the Western Inland region of New South Wales. You're listening to the Country Hour. It is 24 minutes to one.
What is Test cricket? Jim Maxwell explains.
Test cricket is the form of the game because it is unpredictable. It has drama, theatre, and wonderful expression of character.
Edge has caught it, second slip. Steve Smith takes the catch.
So Edge taken by Payne.
Again, Edge is bowled. Cleaned him up with a beauty.
Test Match Cricket 2019 on Grandstand.
On air, online, and on the ABC Listen app.
On ABC Radio South Australia and Broken Hill, this is the South Australian Country Hour.
And I'm Cassie Huff with you today on the day before Christmas. We're going to head up to the Adelaide Hills now, where hundreds of people have turned up for the Adelaide Hills Fire Relief Family Fun Day at NEN. Reporter Bridget Herman is an Adelaide Hills local. She's there now. Hi, Bridget.
Hi, Cass.
So what's the vibe of the event like there today? Are people happy or still very much trying to come to grips with what's happened with the fires?
Look, Cass, what this community's gone through is devastating. But today it really does feel like Christmas here. This event is all about giving the Adelaide Hills much-needed relief. Donations were secured before today so people can grab essential items like food and nappies, but there's also children's entertainment, face painters, a marching band, there's some mental health support, and there's a whole bunch of locals who are just here for a chat. Donated goods were also shipped to Lobethal, which was really badly hit by the fire, and the organisers say that some other leftovers may be sent to New South Wales communities who have also been affected by bushfires in their areas.
And so how many people have shown up?
There's a couple of hundred people who've been here. People have come and gone all morning. There's people here who have lost their entire house, have lost everything. But unfortunately, many people are still at home putting up flare-up fires at their houses and on their properties. So these donated goods are also going to be sent straight to them. I spoke to Mount Barker Council Mayor Ann Ferguson just a moment ago about how the council is getting these communities back on their feet.
Thank you, Bridget, and it's great that you're here to let the community know how fantastic the Hills people are and how they've stepped up to the plate and being so kind and generous. And it just identifies and reinforces that Mount Barker Council has the most volunteers of anywhere in South Australia by the last census. So this is just reinforcing how amazing our people are in our district to give so much to the community, the wider community. And I am so thrilled with Michelle pulling this off in such a short time and delivering so much joy to so many people. And as you look around the hall and you see it just packed with Christmas cheer for families, it just humbles me so much.
And the Adelaide Hills is, well, it's out of Adelaide. The Adelaide Hills is more of a slightly more isolated community. How important are volunteers in this situation?
Volunteers are paramount, and the Adelaide Hills is It's in the Mount Lofty Ranges, so that tells you the terrain is challenging and hence the fire that's been able to do the damage that it has done. But you know what? There's always good out of evil, and the fire is evil. But you look around and you see the good that's come out of this just prior to Christmas, bringing Christmas cheer and the connectedness of communities and people just wanting to help one another. It is just humbling.
And which parts of your council area have been affected?
Brookunga and Harrogate are the affected ones, and the rest has been in the Adelaide Hills. And my heart goes out to those in the Adelaide Hills. But when there's fires, there's no boundaries, and we're there to help everybody.
And we've spoken about the importance of volunteers. What is the council going to be doing to help these families in the aftermath of this fire?
Well, council is there to, at the end of the phone, all you have to do is ring up. If your rubbish bins are melted and you need new rubbish bins, you just contact council, and Solo will deliver new bins in the ensuing week. So council will do absolutely everything it can to alleviate the stress on our residents.
What about in terms of specific fire relief?
Fire relief is a whole raft of communities coming together with fire relief. And if there's anything that council can do, if they're asked, we will do it. We've supplied our equipment to go out with the graders and bulldozers to make fire breaks. So anything that we can do, we have water. If you've got fire trucks, you need to come in and get water. The water's at Laratinga, so we have all those things that are needed. People are coordinating fodder to go to the Oakbank Racecourse, so you can bring fodder in there or you can come and collect fodder if you need it. So the racecourse has really come to the fore. We are so blessed to have so many amazing people.
And what about the primary producers in your area, the ones who have really, they've lost their livelihood? What are you going to be doing to help them in the long term?
Well, in my district, we have lost cattle and sheep and, of course, crops and hay. So we will be coordinating. I mean, there was somebody from Tumby Bay said, we're in the truck, we're coming over with a load of hay. So when those kind of things are offered, we will coordinate that and make sure that it goes to the right people.
Great. Well, thanks so much for your time, Anne.
My pleasure.
So we've also got here today Rhett Leverington, who organised this relief drive with his wife Michelle. Rhett, why are you helping the community?
We woke up the next morning after the fires and both heard of how, you know, some family members and friends had all been affected, and we just wanted to help out the community. It was, yeah, a lot of people have been affected, so we just wanted to do something.
And in smaller communities, does that load often fall on volunteers and community members to help one another?
Yeah, I mean, the community spirit's been great and how everyone's helped out. We've got heaps of volunteers here today. We had 120 people in the hall the other night packing gifts and sending out donations, so the community's been great.
Looking around, there's children's activities, there's food, drinks, a lot of essential items.
Yep.
What's actually on offer for the families who have been affected here today?
So we've got everything from clothes to toiletries, food, water, anything they need, really, all their basic supplies. So yeah, we've got Santa here with some gifts as well for all the kids. So.
You're also accepting donations. Where is that money going to?
So we've got some tins around for the CFS as well, and then we're working with some other charities and that as well to get some money to the families that have been affected as well. So.
And any items that don't go today, what's going to happen to them?
They're going to be donated. So at the moment we've got quite a lot of stuff in storage that's going to be distributed out. We're working with some people in Lobethal as well to help distribute some stuff out.
And how are you going to make sure that it goes to the families most in need?
Well, I know myself and my wife have both driven stuff over there ourselves and made sure that it's going there. We had some great people yesterday that loaded up some cars and trailers and drove it over there themselves. So, yeah.
What does this kind of immediate help offer to small communities?
It's just a small something to help people, you know, to start to rebuild, really. It's going to be a long process for a lot of people, so anything we can do to take, you know, a bit of the difficulty out of it. So it's just about making it as easy as possible for those families to start rebuilding. It's a great, strong community and there'll be plenty of help around. So I think we'll definitely be rebuilding for sure.
Thanks so much.
No worries.
Yeah, it is a strong community. That was organiser Rhett Leverington speaking there. Bridget, you've had a lot of chats with people at the event at NAN today. Is there anything else on around the region?
This is one of many events on around the hills. This is a tough community and everybody has rallied together. It's Christmas Eve and I believe there's an event on tonight in Lobethal, which will bring some relief and some cheer to the locals there.
Great to hear it. Well, Merry Christmas, Bridget. I'll let you go. People will continue to hear from you, though, over the Christmas period. So have a nice break and we'll chat with you again on the 27th. You only have the 2 days off, same as me, so we'll be back with everyone on the 27th of December. We're going to move away from the fire and the Christmas coverage now, but staying with the fruit and veg because it's green around the edges and it has a big red blush and it's very tasty whether it's hard or soft, but make no bones about it, this is one very masculine pear, believe it or not. A new breed of Australian pear is proving to be a hit on Asian supermarket shelves and the industry says it's because they've zigged the marketing of the fruit with the rest of the pear world being zagged. It's quite an interesting way of describing their marketing, but Warwick Long spoke to Andrew Mandemaker from Apple and Pear Australia about the launch of the Rico pear to export markets.
This year we launched our pear into Thailand as our first export market for the pear. It comes from Tatura, where they've deliberately a number of pears with a lovely blush finish, sort of red on brown, and they've got a really good eating quality. We've taken over commercialisation rights from the Victorian government, and we're looking to build export markets. A market here in Australia is primarily looking to build export markets for premium quality blushed pears.
Yeah, so this is a pear that was developed over decades. Now it's finally being grown commercially, and now it's having its first taste of being sent to an international market. That must feel like a significant moment, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Our growers are ecstatic that they've, after many years, they're actually able to see a brand in place and a pear being enjoyed. Pears take a long time to breed and take a long time to grow. It takes 5 years for a pear tree to bear a commercial crop. So it takes a long time, and the growers up in Shepparton who have this have these trees and produce these fruit and wait a long time to see some results. So they're really happy at the moment to see a brand in place and to see a supermarket in Thailand getting behind the brand and getting behind the pear.
Will the pear itself be suited to export markets, particularly in Asia?
In its breeding and the research they've done behind it has absolutely been around the Asian palate and the Asian market. So we've done taste testing and consumer acceptance testing in Thailand and also in Indonesia, to look at how they respond to a blush pear and how they prefer it to the ordinary pears that they would get from Australia or perhaps South Africa or from Argentina. With the pears, they're often pears that used to be for canning, like a Packham's or a Williams. Green pears don't eat very well, are hard to ripen, take a long time, and they have to be eaten soft. They can't really be eaten firm. And just a bit boring looking, just a green, ordinary looking green pear versus something that can be eaten soft or eaten firm. And it's also a lovely colour. We know that the Asian consumers shop with colour in mind, and they look for bright coloured fruit. So if we want to build a market in Asia, we need to use bright coloured fruit.
A red all rounder that's a little bit more exciting of the pear world.
Yeah, well, the excitement's there in the pear, but you really add value for that excitement part from the brand itself. So the pear is better than the pears that we have marketed in the past. But it's the brand that makes the difference. So the brand is quite different to the way other things are marketed. A lot of apples and pears, they're marketed in the same sort of way. They have brands which are related to things like Red Love or Smitten. They fit in a very small box of marketing. And with these pears, we've done something quite different, and we've taken it to a much more as opposed to feminine, to a masculine place, to a brand that's quite irreverent, doesn't take itself too seriously. It's sort of faux fashion brand. So we're taking it to a much different place, and that's really responded well. We got a good response from the retailer in Thailand, because they see so many people coming with, especially with apples, but also with new pear varieties. But it's all more of the same, really. So they're looking for something that stands out and is a bit different from just another red apple or just another green pear.
That was Andrew Mandemaker, Head of Quality and Innovation with Apple and Pear Australia, speaking to Warwick Long about their very interesting marketing of a new pear variety. Finally today, as we were talking about in the weather, the summer days leading up to Christmas can be quite warm and can mean trips to the beach or spending time by the pool for some. But I know for me, it sounds like no farmers I know on my family's farm, we're still feeding cattle, and we've heard from many farmers over the last couple of days that Christmas is their busiest time of year, particularly for those at the height of their harvest. And working alongside the farmers are their staff, who are sweating it out in the heat, which might be 40 degrees or hotter than 40 degrees hotter than they're used to at this time of year. Melanie Groves went along to talk to those hard at work, meeting some of the backpackers from Europe who are on a tropical fruit farm in central Queensland.
All right, start again.
My name's Elliot Davies. I'm English, and I'm out here picking fruit.
It's a little bit warmer than I'd say the average day in England. Tell me a little bit about how you're finding working on an Australian tropical fruit farm in North Queensland.
Yeah, I wasn't ready for it. In fact, this is my first time in Queensland as well. I've spent my whole time here since May in Melbourne. It's been a little bit cooler. I wasn't ready. Like, I feel like I'm going to be slow cooked like a pulled pork when I step out there. But it's different. I think in London at the minute it's 2 degrees, so it's it's hotter.
And you, I mean, pulled pork aside, how are you going surviving the heat and also working on a farm, which is probably a little bit different work to what you're used to as well?
Yeah, I've spent my whole life pretty much behind a desk in an air-conditioned office, but I've remembered my slip-slop slap. So yeah, I'm actually finding it better than I thought. The trees do provide some shade. The water coming off the harvesters, lovely. I'm going through about 10 litres of water a day. But it's easier than I thought. It was easier than I was warned by friends.
And so temperature-wise, very different. But also this, just even seasonally-wise, this is very different because we are very close to Christmas. And picking mangoes and working on a mango farm is probably not what you'd normally be doing for Christmas. How does that differ? What do you normally do at this time of year?
I'm normally down the pub for about a week before. I've spent my last sort of 5 Christmases working in London and then heading up to my parents and then spending until the new year with them. This will be the first Christmas that I've spent away from my family. I don't really feel any difference, to be honest. I'm just drinking and eating less. That's probably the main difference.
So you don't think there's any major cultural difference between a British Christmas and an Australian Christmas?
Well, from what I've heard about Christmas dinner, it's very similar, apart from no Yorkshire puddings. But this Christmas is going to be different because, you know, on this farm we have an Estonian couple, French couple, who, you know, they want to bring their own thing to Christmas. So they're making different things. And that'll be really nice because it's going to be a mix of cultures. And I'm sure on Christmas Day, I'll discover new things about how they spend their Christmas. Because I think despite the weather, Australians actually celebrate Christmas very similarly to the English.
Hello, my name is Eva Taylamé and I'm from France. I've been here last year and it's been a wonderful experience, so we wanted to do it again and yeah, it was cool.
This is the second year that you've been working on this farm and packing mangoes. Mm-hmm. Tell me, how is Christmas different here in Australia on a mango farm compared to what you would normally do in France?
In France, I will be eating like cheese and something hot, and here I just want to eat cold mangoes, cold lychees, And yeah, it's very different with the weather. The weather changed everything.
What about culturally? What do you do with your day, Christmas Eve, Christmas Day? Is it the same or is it different to Australia?
I think in Australia we don't do Christmas Eve more. There is a big lunch, like huge lunch.
On Christmas Eve, not yes. Christmas Day?
Christmas Day it's with the leftover from the day before. And maybe some family are opening all the presents, but my family are doing it on Christmas Eve.
That was Eva Tellamy from France. She was speaking with Melanie Groves about some of the key differences that the Europeans who are working in Australia on farms have compared to their Christmases that they would normally have in Europe compared to Australia. And I can imagine it is quite a temperature difference, but we do have a lot of European influence on our Christmases. So there would be a lot of similarities there for them as well. Finally today, I thought I might leave you heading into Christmas with a touching Christmas song that's been written to try to help those who are in drought. We know that large parts of South Australia have had a pretty rubbish year when it comes to rainfall, and country singer Luke O'Shea composed the song with the help of ABC 24 reporter and violinist Kumi Taguchi. It's called A Christmas Song for Drought, and the duo came together for a country festival at the Nindigully Pub, which is about 500 kilometres west of Brisbane, and Nindigully has been drought-stricken for more than 5 years. So they got together and created a lovely song for Christmas.
He'd say, listen to those words, son.
Country singer Luke O'Shea has won so many awards and he's played gigs all over the country. So who better to compose a song for our farmers?
This was a tricky song to kind of figure out because it's a Christmas song and you want it to be positive, but you're also covering a subject matter which is quite heartbreaking. You want to be respectful to that and those feelings that are real for so many people out there, but you also want to give hope.
Maybe it's on my phone.
I mentioned to Luke that I play the violin, so he's written a part for me and he wants me to perform with him on stage at a country festival. I haven't played for ages and in front of an audience.
Then that's the high one. So how are you feeling?
I don't want to stuff up. Yeah. The perfectionist in me is coming out.
Well, there are reindeers near the North Pole. There's no rain here in my town. And Rudolph's nose is red and red is all I see. Dear Santa, won't you send it down? On my phone, maybe we should up and leave, or maybe you're just testing the faith to see who believes. God, it's so hard to believe. Oh, will those reindeers near the North Pole? There's no rain here in my town, and all the dust is red, and red is all I see. Dear Santa, won't you send it? Santa, won't you let it rain? Here on my home, let it rain here in my town. And all the red dust, give a long turn green. If Santa, you just send it down, won't you just send it down? Please, Santa, won't you send it down? Santa, won't you send it down?
That was country singer Luke O'Shea with ABC 24 reporter and violinist Kumi Tamaguchi performing at the Nindigully pub. Absolutely. Santa, if you could send it down, that would be great. We need a lot more rain next year across much of Australia. So hopefully that does come in 2020. I hope you have a restful and fun time with your family and friends. Do stay safe over this Christmas period. We'll be back on Friday. We'll just have the 2 days off. We'll be coming to you during the cricket break. Right now, though, it's coming up to 1 o'clock. It's time for news. You'll have a Merry Christmas.
Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.